A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Almost everybody thinks about food safety the same way. Put it in the fridge, keep it cold, throw it out if it sits on the counter too long. That's the only mental model we've got. But there's a second method that's equally valid, and almost nobody considers: keep food so hot that bacteria can't survive.
Which is wild when you think about it, because for most of human history, that was the default. Before refrigeration, if you wanted food to be safe tomorrow, you kept the fire going under it.
And Daniel sent us a prompt that gets right at this. He's moving into a new apartment, no fridge yet, and he's asking, what if I just ran a perpetual stew? A pot that stays hot, that I add ingredients to as I go, that I eat from for days or even a week. No food science degree, no thermometer obsession, just a slow cooker and some basic know-how. Is that actually safe? Can a normal person pull this off without giving themselves food poisoning?
I love this question because it collides with everything modern food culture has taught us. We've been conditioned to believe that food left out for more than 2 hours is dangerous. And that's true, at room temperature. But a simmering pot isn't left out. It's actively pasteurizing itself.
The question isn't, is perpetual stew safe? The question is, under what conditions is it safe, and how do you maintain those conditions in a real apartment kitchen with real human forgetfulness?
And the answer is surprisingly straightforward once you understand the thermal kill zone. Most pathogenic bacteria, Salmonella, E. coli, Listeria, Clostridium perfringens, die at 165 degrees Fahrenheit within seconds. A standard slow cooker on low maintains between 190 and 200 degrees. That's not just above the danger zone, that's actively lethal to the things that make you sick.
The pot is self-sterilizing.
The USDA explicitly states that food held above 140 degrees Fahrenheit is safe indefinitely from bacterial growth, not safe for a few hours, because bacteria cannot reproduce above that threshold. The danger zone is 40 to 140, that's where bacteria double every 20 minutes. A perpetual stew never enters that zone if you keep it running.
Which is the entire game. The stew isn't the risk. The risk is the moments when you add something cold to it and the temperature dips. That's what Daniel's really asking about. When I throw in raw chicken or a handful of vegetables from the fridge, am I creating a temporary danger zone in the pot?
The answer is, it depends on thermal mass. If you've got 4 quarts of stew at 200 degrees and you add a pound of room temperature chicken, the temperature drops to about 185, still well above the kill zone. If you add a pound of frozen chicken, it drops to roughly 170. That's tighter but still safe, and it recovers quickly because the thermal mass of the liquid is so much greater than what you added.
The physics works in your favor. The pot is big, hot, and dense. A handful of cold ingredients is a rounding error.
The key is not to overwhelm it. Add ingredients in small batches, keep the lid on to minimize heat loss, and let the pot recover for 10 minutes between additions. That's the whole protocol. You don't need a thermometer if you follow that rhythm, though I'd recommend one for the first day or two just to build confidence.
There's actually a nice piece of reporting on this. NPR ran a food safety article in June of 2025 that confirmed the primary risk with perpetual stew isn't the stew itself. It's cross-contamination from utensils, from hands, from leaving the lid off too long. The stew is self-sterilizing. The human is the weak link.
Which is true of basically all cooking, if we're being honest.
But there's also a great New York Times piece from July 2023 about a Brooklyn chef who ran a perpetual stew for 45 days. His protocol was simple. Bring it to a boil once a day. Never let it drop below 185 and strain out the solids every few days so the texture doesn't degrade into mush. 45 days. Nobody got sick.
That's the thing. This isn't experimental. This is how humans cooked for millennia. Medieval pottage, French pot au feu, the various Asian hot pot traditions, these weren't culinary affectations. They were the default because relighting a fire from scratch was labor-intensive and fuel was expensive. Keeping the pot going was the efficient move.
What Daniel's proposing isn't some fringe weirdo experiment. It's the ancestral human cooking method. He's just doing it with a slow cooker instead of a hearth.
A slow cooker is actually better for this than an open fire ever was. Precise temperature control, consistent heat, no flame to manage. You can get a 6-quart slow cooker for what, $30? That's a perpetual stew machine that costs less than a takeout dinner for two.
The weird part is psychological. We've been trained to associate safe food with cold food. The idea of a pot that never goes in the fridge feels wrong, even when the microbiology says it's fine. That's the real barrier Daniel's going to face. Not the bacteria, but the voice in his head saying, "This has been out for 3 days. I'm going to die."
That voice isn't irrational. It's been trained by a century of refrigeration-first food safety messaging. The 2-hour rule, the when in doubt, throw it out, mantra. Those are good rules for room temperature food. They're terrible rules for a simmering pot. But nobody teaches the distinction.
That's the episode. The science of why perpetual stew works. The practical protocol for running one in a modern apartment. And the psychological hurdle of trusting heat the way we trust cold.
I think we should lead with the one fact that makes the whole thing click. The USDA, not some food blogger, not a wellness influencer, the actual United States Department of Agriculture says food held above 140 degrees is safe indefinitely. That's the anchor. Everything else is details.
That's a strong word from a government agency.
It's a precise word. They don't use it lightly. Bacterial growth is a binary condition. Above 140, it stops, not slows down. The proteins denature, the cell walls rupture, the reproductive machinery shuts off. You're not preserving food in the sense of slowing decay. You're maintaining an environment where decay is impossible.
Which is a fundamentally different mental model than refrigeration. A fridge buys you time. A simmering pot eliminates the clock entirely.
Let's define what we're actually talking about. A perpetual stew is a pot kept at a continuous simmer, days, weeks, in some cases literally years, where you add fresh ingredients as you go and ladle out portions when you're hungry. The pot never goes cold.
Which, if you say that to a modern person, sounds like a health code violation waiting to happen. But this was the default cooking method across huge swaths of human history. The pot stayed on the fire because relighting it was a pain and fuel wasn't free.
It wasn't just convenience. In a world without refrigeration, the perpetual fire was your food preservation system. You didn't cook a meal and store the leftovers. You maintained the meal continuously, and it stored itself.
Which is exactly Daniel's situation, or at least the modern version of it. New apartment, no fridge yet, wants something hot and filling available without thinking about it. A slow cooker solves the fire problem. You plug it in, you set it to low. And you've got a perpetual stew machine that costs less than a decent pizza.
The tension here is genuinely interesting because it's not a science problem. It's a culture problem. Modern food safety training tells us one story. Food left out for more than 2 hours is dangerous. That's drilled into us. It's on every restaurant wall, every health department poster. But that rule assumes room temperature. It assumes the food is sitting passively at 70 degrees, which is smack in the middle of the danger zone. A simmering pot is not left out. It's being actively held at a temperature where bacteria can't exist.
The 2-hour rule is correct for the condition it was designed for. It's just that nobody bothers to explain the condition. They teach the rule as if it's universal.
And that's why Daniel's question feels transgressive, even though it shouldn't. He's not proposing anything unsafe. He's proposing something that violates a rule he's been taught. But the rule doesn't apply to the thing he's doing. The discomfort is real, but it's not based on microbiology.
It's like being told your whole life that you can't swim in water. And then someone shows you a swimming pool and says, "This is fine. The rule was about oceans during storms." The rule was never about all water. It was about a specific set of conditions.
And the perpetual stew has been swimming just fine for thousands of years. So let's talk about what actually happens when you add raw chicken to a simmering pot, because that's the moment everyone's brain screams danger. You've got a 4-quart slow cooker running at 200 degrees. You drop in a pound of raw chicken breast straight from the fridge. The temperature drops to about 185. That's still 20 degrees above the kill threshold for Salmonella and Campylobacter. The surface bacteria on that chicken are dead within seconds. The interior comes up to temperature in minutes.
The scary moment isn't actually scary. The math checks out.
The math checks out. And if you're adding frozen chicken, the temperature drops to about 170. That's tighter, but it's still above 165, and it recovers within 10 to 15 minutes if you keep the lid on. The USDA slow cooker guidelines confirm this. A standard slow cooker on low holds between 190 and 200 degrees, which means even with a cold addition, you're never dipping into the danger zone unless you massively overload the pot.
What counts as massively overloading?
Dumping in 3 pounds of frozen stew meat all at once. Don't do that. Add it in batches. Let the temperature recover between additions. The rule of thumb is about a pound at a time, which is convenient because that's roughly what you'd add for a meal's worth of protein anyway.
The protocol writes itself. Small additions. Lid on. 10 minutes between batches. That's the whole safety system.
The NPR piece from last June made a point worth underlining. The stew itself is self-sterilizing, but your ladle isn't. The real risk is cross-contamination from a spoon that touched raw chicken, or hands that weren't washed, or leaving the lid off so long that something airborne settles in. The human factor.
Which is the same risk as any other cooking. You don't lick the knife after cutting raw chicken, whether you're making a perpetual stew or a Tuesday night stir-fry.
The perpetual stew doesn't introduce new risks. It just concentrates the existing ones into a single, continuous process, which is arguably easier to manage because you develop a rhythm.
The Brooklyn chef from that New York Times piece. He ran his stew for 45 days. What was his daily routine?
Bring it to a full boil once a day, usually in the morning. Never let it drop below 185. Strain out solids every few days because vegetables break down and turn the broth grainy. And he treated the pot like a living thing. You feed it, you tend it, you pay attention to how it smells and looks. 45 days, no illness, no off flavors he couldn't correct by adjusting the seasoning.
45 days is extreme for what Daniel's talking about. He's looking at maybe a week while he gets settled. But the principle scales down perfectly. A 7-day perpetual stew is just a 45-day stew that you decided to end earlier.
Honestly, 7 days is the sweet spot for a beginner. After about a week, you start getting flavor fatigue. The broth gets overextracted, bitterness accumulates from broken down vegetable matter, and you're better off starting fresh anyway. The goal isn't to set a record. It's to have hot, safe, nutritious food available without thinking about it.
There's another angle here that I don't think gets enough attention. A perpetual stew isn't just safe. In some ways, it's safer than what most people do with leftovers. How many people let a pot of soup cool on the stove for 2 hours before putting it in the fridge? That's exactly the danger zone behavior that the perpetual stew avoids entirely.
The standard cook, cool, refrigerate, reheat cycle actually passes through the danger zone twice, once on the way down, once on the way back up. A perpetual stew never makes that trip. It stays above 140 the entire time. From a pure microbiology standpoint, it's the safer method.
Which is the kind of statement that makes health inspectors twitch, but the numbers don't lie.
The numbers don't lie. Water at a simmer is roughly 185 to 200 degrees. Pathogenic bacteria die at 165. That 30-degree buffer is your margin of safety, and it's maintained passively by a $20 slow cooker. You don't need to be a food scientist. You just need to not unplug the thing.
Or if you do unplug it, you need to know the clock is ticking. What's the power outage window?
In a well-insulated slow cooker with the lid on, the stew stays above 140 for about 2 to 3 hours. If you wrap it in towels, maybe 4. After that, you either bring it back to a boil on whatever heat source you've got, or you accept that the run is over and you discard it. The one thing you absolutely cannot do is let it cool slowly overnight and then reheat it in the morning. That's the failure mode.
Because slow cooling means hours in the danger zone.
Hours in the danger zone with a nutrient-rich liquid that bacteria would love to colonize. If the power goes out at midnight and you don't notice until morning, that stew is done. No rescue, no, I'll just boil it really hard. Some bacterial toxins are heat stable. The bacteria die, but the toxins they produced while you were sleeping survive the reboil.
That's a hard line. Power out while you're awake and paying attention. You can salvage it. Power out while you're asleep. You can't.
That's the kind of rule that's easy to follow because the boundary is clear. It's not a judgment call. It's a binary. Were you conscious and able to respond within 3 hours? If yes, reboil. If no, discard.
I appreciate a food safety rule that doesn't require me to sniff things and make a guess.
Sniffing is useless here anyway. The bacteria that cause food poisoning don't necessarily produce off odors. Clostridium perfringens, one of the most common causes of foodborne illness, grows happily in meat and poultry without producing any noticeable smell. You can't sensory check your way to safety. You need to know the temperature history.
Which brings us back to the elegance of the perpetual stew. The temperature history is simple. It never left the safe zone. You don't need to remember when you cooked it, or how long it sat out, or whether it cooled too slowly. The answer to all those questions is, it didn't.
It didn't. That's the whole thing. The pot is the record. As long as the pot is simmering, the food is safe. The moment it stops simmering, the clock starts.
That's almost poetic. The perpetual stew is honest in a way that refrigerated leftovers aren't. A Tupperware of last Tuesday's chili doesn't tell you anything about its history. It just sits there silently. A perpetual stew is self-documenting. If it's bubbling, it's safe. That's a kind of transparency you don't get from a fridge.
All right, so the science is solid, but safe doesn't automatically mean good. How do you actually run one of these things for 5 to 7 days without it turning into a pot of gray sadness?
This is where the protocol matters. Start with a standard 6-quart slow cooker. Day one, you're building your base. A good broth, aromatics like onions and garlic, hearty vegetables like carrots and celery. Get that simmering for a few hours before you add any protein. The base needs to establish itself.
Add your proteins in the first 24 hours once the base is developed. Chicken thighs hold up better than breasts over long cooking. Beef chuck, lamb shoulder, cuts with connective tissue that break down into gelatin. That gelatin is gold for texture.
Then there's a daily rhythm.
Morning routine. Add fresh ingredients for the day. Vegetables, maybe more broth at the levels dropping, any new protein you want in the rotation. Evening routine. Skim the fat cap, give it a stir, taste for seasoning. The fat cap is actually doing double duty here. The NPR piece noted that traditional perpetual stews maintained a visible fat layer that acted as a thermal blanket and a microbial barrier.
The fat isn't just flavor, it's insulation.
It's a lid on top of your lid. If the power flickers, that fat cap buys you extra time. And when you do skim it, don't remove all of it. Leave a thin layer. You want the barrier.
What about the dilution problem? Every time you ladle out a bowl and add new ingredients, you're thinning the flavor that's been building.
This is the sourdough starter principle. You never fully deplete the pot. Keep at least a third of the volume as your mother, the concentrated base that carries the flavor forward. When you serve yourself a bowl, you're taking from the top, then replenishing with fresh broth and ingredients. The mother stays at the bottom, getting richer.
You're not starting over every time you eat. You're maintaining a continuous culture.
Which sounds fancy, but it's just, don't empty the pot. Keep a ladle's worth of the good stuff in there and build on it. By day three, the depth of flavor is something you can't get from a single afternoon soup.
Now the texture issue. Potatoes, pasta, rice, those break down over hours and turn everything to sludge.
The number one mistake people make with perpetual stew. Potatoes become mealy clouds, pasta swells into mush, rice dissolves entirely. The fix is simple. Cook starches separately and add them to individual bowls, not the main pot. Or use whole grains that hold up. Farro, barley, wheat berries. Those can live in the stew for a day or two without disintegrating. But honestly, the separate starch approach is easier and gives you more variety. Rice one day, noodles the next, crusty bread the day after.
That also solves the monotony problem. Same base, different carb, different meal.
Monotony is real. By day 5 or 6, even the best stew gets familiar. Switching up the starch and the fresh herbs you add at serving time? Cilantro one day, dill the next, a splash of vinegar or chili oil. Keeps it interesting without complicating the pot itself.
Let's talk about the elephant in the room, or rather, the psychological barrier. Most people cannot get past the feeling that food sitting out for days is trying to kill them.
I don't want to dismiss that. That instinct has been trained into us for good reason. In a world of refrigeration, food at room temperature is dangerous. The problem is, we've overgeneralized. We treat not in the fridge as a single category, when simmering on the stove and sitting on the counter are completely different physical realities.
How do you get past the heebie-jeebies?
Trust but verify. Spend $15 on an instant read thermometer. For the first 3 days, check the stew temperature every time you lift the lid. You'll see the same number every time, somewhere between 185 and 200. After 72 hours of consistent readings, your brain starts to accept what the physics already knows. The pot is hot. The pot has been hot. The pot will stay hot.
The thermometer is training wheels.
You don't need it forever. You need it long enough to internalize that the slow cooker is doing exactly what it's designed to do. After that, you trust the machine the same way you trust your fridge. You don't check your fridge temperature 3 times a day.
If the power goes out...
This is the one scenario where you need to be awake and paying attention. A full slow cooker with the lid on stays above 140 for 2 to 3 hours. Wrap it in bath towels and you might get 4. If you're home and the power cuts, you've got a window. Get it onto a gas stove or a camp stove and bring it back to a boil, then transfer it back to the slow cooker once power returns. If the power goes out while you're asleep, that's the hard stop. You wake up, the stew is lukewarm, and you don't know how long it's been sitting in the danger zone. You cannot boil your way out of that. Some bacterial toxins, staphylococcal enterotoxin, Bacillus cereus, survive boiling. The bacteria die, the poison they produced doesn't.
The rule is, conscious power outage, you can save it. A sleep power outage, you can't.
That's not a perpetual stew problem. That's a any cooked food left in the danger zone for an unknown duration problem. The perpetual stew just makes the boundary clearer because you know exactly how long the window is.
One last thing. Is this actually nutritious, or are you just eating hot, safe sludge?
Surprisingly, it can be more nutritious than meal-prepped refrigerated food. Cold storage causes vitamin degradation over time, especially vitamin C and some B vitamins. A perpetual stew loses some heat-sensitive vitamins from the constant simmering. C and B1 take a hit. But the minerals and fat-soluble vitamins, A, D, E, K, remain completely stable.
You're trading some vitamin C for better mineral retention.
Honestly, if you're adding fresh vegetables every day, you're constantly replenishing whatever heat breaks down. A carrot that's been in the stew for 6 hours has lost some vitamin C, but the carrot you added this morning is fresh. The stew is a rolling average of nutrient content, not a single batch slowly depleting. Plus, you're getting collagen and gelatin from all that slow-cooked connective tissue, which is the stuff that makes broth feel like a meal.
You're getting it on demand. That's the part that's hard to appreciate until you've lived with it. You walk past the pot, lift the lid, ladle out a bowl. No defrosting, no reheating, no deciding what to cook. The food is already there, already hot, already good. It's the ultimate low-friction meal.
All right, so let's land this. Someone's heard all this, and they're convinced enough to try it. What's the concrete plan?
That's your commitment. Not 45 days, not a year, not some medieval fantasy. Use a 4-quart slow cooker. Smaller batch, less to manage, less to lose if something goes wrong.
Chicken and vegetable broth base. It's forgiving, it's familiar, it's hard to mess up. Day 1. Fill the slow cooker with chicken broth, toss in a quartered onion, 3 chopped carrots, 2 celery stalks, a few cloves of garlic, salt, pepper. Let that go on low for 4 hours. Then add bone-in chicken thighs. They're cheap, they hold up to long cooking, and the bones add gelatin. Let it go overnight. Day 2. You wake up to a house that smells incredible, and a stew that's already better than anything you could make in an hour.
The safety protocol for those first 3 days?
Buy a $10 instant read thermometer. Every time you lift the lid to add something, check the temperature. You're going to see 190, 200, 195, 200. After 24 hours of that, you'll stop worrying. The thermometer isn't for the stew. It's for your brain.
The add cold slowly rule.
Never more than a pound of cold ingredients at a time. Let the pot recover for 10 minutes before adding more. Keep the lid on except when you're actively ladling or adding. That's it. Pound at a time, 10 minutes between, lid on.
That's simple. I was expecting a checklist.
The physics does the work. You're not managing the stew, you're just not interfering with what the slow cooker is already doing. The machine maintains the temperature. Your only job is to not dump a frozen turkey into it all at once.
When do you stop?
7 to 10 days is the natural endpoint for a beginner. Around day 7, you'll notice the broth getting a little bitter, a little over-extracted. The vegetables that broke down 3 days ago are still in there contributing compounds you don't want. That's the signal. Strain the whole thing, keep the broth, you can refrigerate or freeze it, and start fresh if you want to go again.
The goal isn't the Eternal Pod. It's a week of hot, safe, delicious food with almost no daily effort.
That's the reframe I think Daniel needs. The perpetual stew sounds intimidating because we've mythologized it. The 100-year broth, the pot that never dies. That's not what this is. This is a 7-day meal strategy that happens to use continuous heat instead of a fridge. It's practical, not performative.
There's a deeper thing here, too. Our entire food safety culture is built on refrigeration, because refrigeration is the easiest universal standard. Every home has a fridge. Every restaurant has a walk-in. The rules were written for cold storage because cold storage is what we have. But heat is equally valid as a preservation method. The USDA says so, the physics says so, and thousands of years of human history say so.
Understanding why it works unlocks a whole category of cooking that most modern people have abandoned. Not because it's unsafe, but because we forgot the principles. The perpetual stew isn't a weird historical footnote. It's a legitimate food preservation strategy that happens to also produce incredible meals.
The fridge is a tool. The slow cooker is a tool. They do the same job through opposite means. One slows bacteria down, the other kills them outright.
The slow cooker version has one advantage the fridge will never have. It hands you a hot meal the moment you want it. No waiting, no microwave, no "I'll just eat cereal because I don't feel like cooking." The food is already done.
Which raises a question I can't stop thinking about. If heat preservation works this well, if it's scientifically sound, if it predates refrigeration by millennia, if it produces better food with less effort, why did refrigeration win? Why is every kitchen on Earth built around a cold box instead of a hot pot?
That's the real puzzle, isn't it? And the answer isn't because refrigeration is better. It's because refrigeration is more compatible with industrial food systems. A fridge lets you store food you didn't make. Packaged food, processed food, food from a factory 3 states away. A perpetual stew requires you to cook. It's inherently domestic, inherently hands-on, and that doesn't scale to supermarkets and supply chains.
It's not a technology problem. It's an infrastructure problem.
Energy efficiency, too. Keeping a pot at 200 degrees 24/7 costs more electricity than cycling a fridge compressor. Not dramatically more with a modern slow cooker, but enough that at industrial scale, cold storage wins on economics. Plus convenience. A fridge doesn't need to be tended. You close the door and walk away for a week. A perpetual stew wants daily attention.
Right. But that daily attention is also what makes it good. The fridge enables neglect. The stew rewards engagement.
That's the trade-off industrialization made for us. We traded the daily ritual of maintaining food for the ability to forget about food entirely until we're hungry. It's not a bad trade for most people most of the time. But it's worth knowing what we gave up.
The perpetual stew is a reminder that safe doesn't have to mean cold. The rules we follow are built around specific conditions. A fridge in every home, a supply chain that assumes refrigeration, a food culture that treats cooking as a discrete event rather than a continuous process. When you change the conditions, the rules change too.
That's the thing I hope listeners take from this. Not everyone should run a perpetual stew. But the rules you've been taught have boundaries, and understanding those boundaries gives you options you didn't know you had.
Here's the invitation. If any of this made you curious enough to try it, a 3-day stew, a 7-day stew, whatever feels manageable, email us, show@myweirdprompts.com. Tell us what you made, how it went, whether your brain eventually stopped screaming at you. We'll share the best stories.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1930s, researchers in the Yukon discovered that spider silk vibrates at frequencies capable of producing ultrasonic harmonics when stretched across frozen spruce branches, effectively turning entire forests into accidental acoustic arrays.
Right. This has been my Weird Prompts. I'm Corn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. Find every episode at myweirdprompts.com, and if you enjoyed this one, leave us a review wherever you listen. We'll be back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show. My weird prompts, where odd thoughts go, from sloth slow takes to facts on cue. We chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.